episode 145 of Board Games with Variant Hex is all about Carvey. I'm Kelly, and in this episode, Aaron and I talk about a Viking-themed trading and raiding Euro game released in 2023. We have just a couple clarifications as we head into this podcast. We mentioned the Board Game Geek Complexity rating in this episode. For context, Through the Ages has a rating of 4.4, Twilight Imperium has a rating of 4.3, and Maracaibo is a 3.9. This game falls a little bit below that. And we mentioned there are over 20 actions on the rondel for Carvey, but there's actually over 30 actions on the rondel. Without further ado, I'll turn it over to myself and Aaron talking about Carvey.
Can you call it a pirate game?
No.
Why not?
They're not pirates.
They have ships.
They're Vikings.
There's raids. Oh.
Yeah, I think they're Vikings. I don't think they're pirates.
No, I'm just going to be like a pirate. It's just like a sea marauder, like, and generally speaking, not a cultural thing. So wouldn't all Vikings be pirates?
Listen, let's leave that for a different podcast that we don't host.
Okay.
And talk about Carvey,
yeah,
which is a Euro game published last year, 2023. You lead your Viking crew to trade and plunder. It's just a Euro game. The theme didn't like come alive for me while we played it. Did it come alive for you?
You didn't like having to swish swackle. I was trying to
swashbuckle.
Swashbuckle. I didn't even. You know what? I was trying.
Still more, you know, piratey.
No. In my mind, I was going to say two words that meant go back and forth across the ocean.
Oh,
and I made up two nonsensical words that aren't even like words that would mean that.
I wasn't even going back and forth across the ocean.
You were attempting
which was
to.
Probably one of my complaints. Anyways, it is in print. It's a new game. I think it's in print, but it's more common in Europe. So when I tried to like find it online, not as much success. We happen to see it at our local game store.
And that's where we purchased it.
Yeah. That's where we got it from. The weight on BGG of it, which is like the complexity rating, it's out of 5, except nothing's a 5, was 3.42, which is pretty high. And that seems fair enough given, you know, just how difficult it can feel to try to get things done.
I mean, like Twilight Imperium is like a 4.5 or whatever. So
I don't know.
4s.
I don't know. Yeah. 3.42 is on the heavier end for sure. It's 2 to 4 players, 120 to 180 minutes. So
yes.
it's not quick.
Only 3 rounds.
Yeah. Only 3 rounds. So every round is nearly an hour.
The last round is the longest round. You get more, you have more pips by then.
You probably do, but you wouldn't.
And by pips, I mean beers.
Yes, which we are going to get to. So you are in this game. It's like you have a Viking boat that you're the leader of. You've got a crew and you're trying to like set up villages and trading posts and generally be the best Viking around in doing so. Because all of the upgrades that you do to your ship should allow you to execute all those actions better. And all of those things more or less turn into points somehow.
Right.
Or powering you towards points. How you're literally taking a turn is that there is an action rondel that has, 25?
Yes.
Ish? Maybe? Ish. Something 20-ish? Spaces on it. And it is a variable because you kind of place these tiles around this board and they have two sides to each one of them. So, you know, the exact actions available and how much they cost could change. You navigate around that using a die that you never roll.
You do not roll the die.
You are just using it as a counter, counter and a tracker. In two players, you have two dice. But
That's right.
I think in higher play counts, I think you just have one.
That's right.
And so the pips on that die.
You have two dice in 3 player as well.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then, four players.
You just have one.
One die, 4 round.
Oh. The pips on there indicate how many like action points you have. And the different spaces around this rondel show you how many action points you need to execute that thing. And there's a variety of different actions. And it's a ratcheting mechanism. So you can go as far forward as you want, but you can never go backwards. And there's kind of like a home tile, starting tile. Once you make it back to the starting tile, you stay there until everyone's made it back to the starting tile.
Right.
And then you go into the next round. You kind of leave that again. So in a sense, it feels like that part feels like Takedo.
Right. But it's better than Takedo.
It's worse. Which is a point that I'm going to be making later. Anyways, it's this ratchet mechanism. And you're spinning these points down. There are spots on which you get to refill the die, which means that you
get more beer.
Of course, just like a Euro, there's ways that you can pay your resources and take actions into earning the ability to refill more beer as the game continues. But that would be ultimately optional. You might never get more beer, depending on the choices you make in the game. You never get to fulfill higher than the base level amount of beer,
right,
depending on what you do. So that's the action rondel. There's also a map. It's very large. I think there's no reason for it to be as large as it is.
I love it.
For what actually happens. Now, in four players, I think maybe it makes a little more sense. Maybe I want a different two-player. But they give you two dice so you can do more actions, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I don't like how big the board is, and then ultimately how little I felt like it was necessary for it to be that big. Your ship is going to different cities. And at those cities, or at those different destinations, there's three different things that happen. You can either be putting out a tower or a house.
Yep.
That's kind of one thing. And you get victory points for that. It increases the one of the other actions as well. So again, you're getting this idea that you do things to increase the potency kind of the actions that you take.
Yeah.
So you get some points for it, but it also gets you more things as you take actions later on. You can go to a raid tile,
yep,
which you can pick up. You can just pick it up. That's fine. You can pick up as many as you want. It's a separate action to actually execute that raid, but you basically reserve it by picking it up. Yeah.
And the raids have like requirements that you must meet, but you don't have to meet it to pick it up as Kelly.
You don't have to meet it to pick it up.
You can have a raid strength of 2 and pick up the 24 raid tile and just, you won't be able to do anything with it.
You won't be able to do anything with it, but it also didn't cost you anything to pick it up. It's a free action. Trade tiles work basically the same way, but you, instead of needing a Viking on your crew of a certain strength to be able to do them, for the trade ones, you need a certain amount of resources to be able to do them. Each one, when you then take its related action on the action rondel, when you land your dice on it and pay for it, if there's a cost, you get to take that tile from your reserve, pay whatever the amount that you need to pay or execute against if it's a raid, and then you get the bonuses for completing that.
Right.
And you get to add it to your player board. So you have your own player board that you're building out and kind of upgrading as you go. There's a ship on it that you can add things to your ship, add sails to your ship, which are going to give you unique powers. Kind of, it's sort of a rule breaky thing where like you add something and then every time you take this action, you get to also do this. It's that sort of thing. The ones you get to pick from, though, are pre-selected at the start of the game. So there's three slots on your ship for sails. You get two options for each one of those slots, and that's at the beginning of the game, and that's it. There's no other options there. You could choose to use both of the ones in one slot, but you have to like use one and then cover it up to use the second one.
Right.
So there's a slot for that. There's a slot for all your trading tiles as you adventure, collect them, and then actually execute those trades by spending the resources. There's a spot to put all of the resources there. They usually get you points. They also help you with things during the game, making your actions more powerful. There's a spot for the raid ones in the exact same way.
Right.
With different little actions and different little upgrades that they earn you. And then there's a spot for, what were those called? Runestones.
Right.
Because apparently that's how you're like recording your adventures or something. And those are like require in-game scoring. You have to meet a certain requirement in order to add it to your board.
Right.
I think. And then at the end of the game, there's a couple things listed on there. And if you fulfill those requirements, you get that score.
Points.
I think that's everything, pretty much.
Yeah,
when you do the raids, your Vikings could die, but they don't die right away.
You get points when they die.
You get points when they go to Valhalla. And you also get points at the end of the game if they didn't go to Valhalla.
Yeah.
So there's that. It is well designed and colorful. Like, it's not like an all beige kind of thing. In the box, when you buy it, there's all of these little like tuck boxes that you build, like you create, that hold all the components. Now, because of how many different little components are in it.
The tuck boxes are dumb.
The tuck boxes are maybe not as exciting as they felt when you opened the box.
Because
you want to separate the things a little further than what the tuck boxes allow.
And
I
they're
think.
Not separated smartly.
And they're
there's
not
like,
if there were dividers,
with the provisions, and you're like, okay.
If there were dividers also for the tuck boxes, I think That would be about right.
Now, I will say one thing.
Yeah.
The only time the tuck boxes make sense, and it's really when you want to make them to make, when you want them to make sense for the game, because it's when you need them to be like taking stuff out. They tuck boxes are organized in a way that you, if you follow the setup instructions, you're taking, you're emptying a box and then going to the next box and emptying a box and going to the next box and emptying a box.
And that's a good level of organization between the storage and the setup.
And it is a lot of setup.
It's a lot of setup. Yes. And I think that if you had, it didn't have to be plastic bags, but if they were further subdivided,
yeah,
I don't think that would be a bad thing.
No, because there's like one box for all of the ship upgrades and runestones. And you're like, well,
but I've got to separate them all back out in order
to. And then you have to sort them out, and then you have to like sort the ones with the snakes and without the snakes, and you know it's a whole mess.
It's a whole thing. Once you understand the game and know the, you know, once you've understood the meaning behind the different pieces, it's not hard to do though. Right. Like it doesn't, but it is a lot of pieces of cardboard. It's definitely just a big box of cardboard.
In the game setup, there's a number of components that aren't used in every playthrough, and it's nice to just chuck them back in their tuck box and put them back in the box instead of like, this goes back in the box. And like, I think a game tray would have been nicer, but the tuck boxes are a close second.
The way the pieces are, I think you could have had a pretty low profile game tray that could have nicely stored quite a bit of it. But so be it. That's still open for, I don't know that there's any pre-made inserts for this game yet, how new it is. And it's not like hugely popular as far as I can tell.
Right.
That could be out there in the future. Thematically, I also think that it all makes enough sense.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's fun that the rating, like it's sort of a, like there's very little like Viking on Viking violence. There's just a touch.
Yeah.
And in a 2-player game, because most of the Viking on Viking violence is just pushing people around the water, not actually causing them damage. But in a 2-player game, as Kelly mentioned, the map's really big. We were never close to one another.
No, I think I think the first time we played, maybe one time did one of us push the other one, but you could very easily like. You're not running into one another constantly because once you kind of set off in a direction, movement isn't so easy. And maybe they're just thematically telling us that movement wasn't easy, that you're likely to try to disrupt someone else.
Right. Cause it's going to cost like, you to do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's the theme is really good. I think.
Yeah. And my thing about the sailing is I felt like, even though it's very cute, like the board, it looks lovely. You make these little cardboard ships and you stack the provisions on like the mast of the ship.
I really like that the provisions are stored on the ship.
All of that is real fun. And what's not fun is actually doing anything with that ship because you feel like you barely get to sail it. Or it just feels like, for me, I've like a lot of resources went into it. And I'm saying all this, I did win by like a point.
Yeah.
I executed the game just fine. But while we were playing it, I felt like, well, I didn't feel like I was really getting much of anything done. It just felt like, and the thing about the ratcheting, which is my complaint that I referenced earlier, is in Takedo, you can stop and do every single action, the first available action if you want.
Right.
Because you don't have to pay for the actions, you just do them.
Right.
And then to ratchet ahead, you're really only doing that strategically or desperately. You desperately need something, so you just can't afford to not skip those things and go forward. Or strategically, you see how much someone else desperately needs something and you want to put them in a more uncomfortable position.
Right.
And that's your motivation for going ahead. In this one, you have no choice sometimes, and you're skipping tons of actions.
Right, because you have to
you
pay.
You just don't have enough.
A very limited. So you start the game with 4 beers.
Yeah.
And you're going around, you can refill beers halfway through the round. But in general, until the third or fourth round, when you've built up your beer to a much more manageable volume.
You're probably at zero beers.
You're at zero beers.
Maybe one.
You have to pay for the actions. I love it because in Takedo, you feel like I can't jump ahead to the thing that strategically befits me because it's too advantageous for the people behind me. In this game, I can jump ahead. And because everything on the way to me costs money, I'm not giving up as much by picking the best thing for me.
And for me, that just feels like I know it's not really that these are actions that I could have taken and don't get to, but that's that feeling. It feels like I'm just skipping over all parts of this game. Like, why do you even put all these here? I can't do all these.
I mean, I did take nearly all the blue actions all the time.
And that's another thing. if someone is, because they feel like they can just skip ahead, if you, both of your boards, your starting board states, kind of had you geared towards valuing the same thing, one of you's not really going to get it.
Well, but you could just jump ahead further if you saw me doing that.
But I'm already jumping ahead past all the things. Yeah. So I did not like, I think I find it unique how they've done this. And also there's different sides to it. And I flipped them over after we were done playing. And I was like, well, I think I just like these other sides more. More of them were one point.
Yeah, they cost one action. And then they're like, gold is a pretty awesome resource in the game. And it was pretty scarce. But there was one on the other side where you paid one action and got a gold.
Zero.
Oh, it was zero gold.
You paid zero to get a gold bar. Oh, and a gold is like a wild resource. And because of what I was doing, I especially at the end, I needed a gold. I needed a few gold. And then I had to pour all of my actions into getting the gold to be able to do the thing. Now, the thing was worth a lot of points and it was the right thing to do. And again, I still won, but I think I was frustrated by what you had to do to get something done. It didn't feel interesting. It felt like, yeah, for the next five turns, this whole round, all I'm doing is trying to get this one thing done because of the scarcity of what's happening.
I feel like, so for me, I love that. It's like, I don't have to think about my next five turns. It's all laid out.
Oh, so bored.
Oh, I can see all the things that are going to be available to me. I can execute this plan. And then I did it. I feel like whether it was the ship moving across the top, because you moved your ship a bunch and you got to all the places that you wanted to go, including the top place that's difficult to get to. And I feel like you just wanted to do things faster, but it's a game where things take multiple turns to execute.
And maybe it's that rondelle, maybe all of it's giving me the impression that I will be able to get more done. And that's not true.
Well, I think one of the things that's interesting is moving the ship is a free action. But you cannot move your ship every turn.
No.
So you are allowed to move it every turn if you have the resources, but you will not have the resources. So you feel like you're wasting an action because you've gotten a turn and you didn't have any provisions. Well, but that's just a part of the game.
Near the end, I was like, well, I guess I never need to move the ship again. And that's fine.
Yeah, because then you don't need to waste time getting provisions. That's great.
I don't like it. I don't like seeing so many actions and then knowing that I don't get to take them.
One of my favorite things to do in Euro games when we play them the first time is to evaluate the different types of things you can do and then see if I can win the game by only doing one of them or like primarily doing one of them and seeing like, hey, is this game like set up in a way that I can ignore part of it and still score well? And so this is, I mean, I'm already thinking of things this way.
Great time.
I did. I love the game.
I did not. The different kinds of actions.
Spoiler. Game of the alert. Game of the month for May. Gonna be Carvey. Love it.
No, it wasn't.
No, for May. We played it this month. It wasn't even on the...
Oh, for May. Yeah. We've played it before. Well, yeah, and I don't know that it was. That's fine. That's fine. We played it
so fast. We played it and I didn't like it because we had to rush at the end.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. The different kinds of actions that you can take are, just so we get those out there. Right. There is a trade action that lets you take these cards. We haven't mentioned that there are cards. There are also cards.
Yeah.
That action, I don't know if it's called, I don't know if it's really called trade. It might be called upgrade.
It is called trade. No, upgrade is the blue one.
Then what's the yellow thing called? Isn't that taking trade tiles?
That's what I thought you were talking about.
It's not.
Oh, because there's yellow cards as well. So I was confused.
There's yellow cards as well. Anyways, there's four decks of cards in two different types.
So there's a yellow action.
I wasn't going to start with the yellow action, but now we are.
Okay, so there's a yellow action. And it allows you, if you collected one of the trade tiles on the board, you can place it.
And you would have done that with your free action by moving your ship to a city that had one of those tiles available to you.
You have to pay some resources for it. And then it nets you some resources and via some yellow cards, it nets you some resources and some other benefits and some points.
You know what? It sounds just like a Euro. It was like, yeah, because you get a thing. And then the stuff, there's also things on the thing that you get. And then that also gets you things.
I mean, you picked to play it.
I know. I'm just saying. So when you do the trade action, because you already have a reserved trade tile next to your board, you have to pay the resources in order to execute that action. You have to pay, you probably have to pay something on your action rondel dice. You might do it for zero and not have to pay any beer. So you pay that beer or not. You pay resources, definitely, for whatever the tile that you selected has on it. And then on the back side of that tile, you get bonuses for having completed it.
Right.
It will be definitely at least one trade card that you will get to use immediately. You get to draw and use immediately. And then sometimes you'll get some other stuff as well. It could be any variety of things. You might get more than one trade card. These trade cards are set out next to the board. There's three of them face up. I don't remember if you can take one off the deck or not.
No say.
Let's say no. There's three of them face up, and they're going to have things that you get for free. Those might be more of like an action type thing or literally a resource.
Or they can give you cards, which we're going to talk about in a second, like blue cards.
That's kind of an act. Well, yeah, that's something they're giving you.
Sure.
Okay. So you might just get a resource. There's fur and silver and gold in the game.
I like to call the silver sand dollars, and it drives you nuts, and I'm sorry.
And yet you're bringing it up right now.
Yeah.
You might get a Viking, a crew member, to add to your ship, and it will say, I believe, the value of that crew member. It can be 1 to 6 for your Viking crew. You might be able to turn over your Viking crew because they can get injured once before they actually die. So once they get injured twice, they go to Valhalla, and you get the points for them. So you might be able to turn someone back over. You might get any one of these other resources. You may also get a card that's a blue card, not a yellow card. The blue cards are beer and ship
and helmet,
like Viking. And they basically do those things. Each one of them helps you in those categories.
Beer gives you more actions. The helmet makes you better rating. The ship makes your ship sail.
Unlike the yellow cards, the blue ones you actually have to pay to use. There's some additional cost. The yellow ones, you get them as a part of completing your trade action. The blue ones, you get them, they're in your hand. You're going to have to pay more resources to actually be able to use whatever the bonus is on there. Some of the cards show two sets of bonuses, and you pick which one that you want. Others just have one on them. So the trade tile that kicked all this off goes onto your board. Underneath every slot where these trade tiles go on, same is true for the raid tiles. There's some other ability, some other bonus that gets unlocked. For the trade tiles, it's usually more beer.
Yep, half the time it's more beer.
There's also one that lets you use the lock action on the action rondelle. It's just a lock icon. Once you get there, you can use that, and it lets you get a resource and a gold, I believe. There's also another option further down the track that lets you go into these, like, I guess they're like secret map spots. It's like you need this map icon to be able to access certain cities. And those have their own tiles and either trading post or village that you can put there. And then if you get to the very end of the track, when you would take that action otherwise, because now it's full, so you're not going to be able to add more tiles, but you might have the action available to you on the action rondelle still. You get a number of points, and I think you have to pay something, though, and then you get just a number of points. Right. The rating side is set up basically the same way, where when you execute the raid action from the action rondelle, you would pay whatever the pips are. You'd flip over the raid tile that you already have reserved. You have to execute the attack, so it's going to tell you how many Vikings you need to do the attack. It's going to tell you how many Vikings get hurt. And then it's going to give you a variety of bonuses.
That's right.
As well. You'll put it on your board. Underneath those are more provisions. So that helps you sail further. Mm-hmm. You get to stack more of them when you refill them. You still have a lock action. It's just different than the one on the trade side.
It increases your military strength by 3.
And you still have the ship, the map icon that lets you go to the different places. You don't have to have like one of each to go to 2 separate places.
Right.
If you get one, you can go to any of the map icon places. And then at the end of it, if you were to take more raid actions after you've already filled up your raid set of tiles, because you can only do each one of those 6 times.
Right.
Then you get way more points than on the trade side. However, at the end of the game, which I had wrong, the trade part only gives you a number of points
however many tiles you got.
So if you got 1, you get 1. If you did it twice, you get 2. You did it 3 times, you get 9. So on and so forth.
Yeah, 149.
What did I say?
129.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 149. So that's the raid and trade actions. Those are 2 of the ones on the rondelle board. There's 2 brown actions, which are just refilling either your beer for your dice pips or your provisions.
Yeah.
And both of those are impacted positively by trading and raiding.
Also, only 1 provision spot. So if one person takes it in a round, you don't get it.
There's 2 at the end.
Oh, 2 at the end. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, but one's not as good as the other one. It doesn't matter. We've covered yellow. We've covered the red rating.
Yeah.
We've covered the brown.
Blue.
There's also blue, which is like upgrading. You can just take a card. Again, when you take a blue card, you'll have to pay extra resources to be able to use that card. So if you have no resources, like, no, you're not going to do well in this action in general, because your other option is to pay resources to upgrade your ship or to get a runestone.
Right.
Your runestone, just like your ship sails, are pre-selected at the start of the game, and you only have certain ones available to you. Now, you can get
more,
some from sailing, but even then, it's still not very many. You only have 3 slots available no matter what. So those are the 2 things you can do with your blue action. When you do the sail upgrades, you do get victory points for doing them right away.
Yeah, 2, 5,
and then
8.
They'll probably give you some enhanced game ability that when you take some other action,
yeah, like
you'll
for me,
be able to...
When I took the blue action, I got 4 points, which is why I try to always take the blue action.
Yes. Yeah. Making it very hard for me to ever take the blue action without then sacrificing quite a bit to jump ahead.
Yeah.
Or paying a lot, because then sometimes...
Oh, I would skip the 2 blue action every time.
And then I have to pay more to do the blue action. There are also spots on that rondelle where you just get resources.
Yep.
There's the lock spot where you only get to use that, get an advantage from it, if you've gone far enough in either raiding or trading to get something from it.
And
then there's this green treasure action. It also gets upgraded by raiding and trading, because when you start, you have 1 village and 1 tower that you can put out. As you continue trading, you get more villages that you can put out because they're unlocked from your board. And as you continue raiding, you get more towers you can put out because they're unlocked from your board. So if you've done more trading, you get more resources when you take that treasure box action. If you've done more raiding, you get more military strength, more raiding strength. You get to upgrade your guys that you have if you take that action.
Yep.
I think we've explained it.
I think so. Now everyone go play it.
No,
you're going to want to read the rules.
You're going to want to read the rules, but that gives you a sense of the density of the actions available to you. It also gives you a sense of how the different things intertwine with one another.
Yeah.
And in our play, I just went full out trade, really, because once I started doing it, I couldn't accomplish anything else. And then to not just go all the way with that was going to not be enough points,
right.
I don't think I could have switched from raiding to trading during the game and been able to score as many points.
No, and I think it's both the times I've played, I've gone all in on one.
I
went all in on the trade the first time and all in on the raid the second time. I think it would be, I think I should, the next time we play it, if you play it again with me, I want to try to play the side we've already played, even though you want to play the other sides, and see if you can play a balanced game. See if you can raid and trade at the same time and score well.
I was closer to raiding and trading the first time we played.
Right.
I was more balanced. This time I was not balanced at all.
You won both times.
I did. And it's not helping my opinion of the game.
Yeah, I liked it and lost both times, which means it's a great game.
For you.
I very rarely like a game that I lose.
Yeah, yeah.
The first time. Like, I'm maybe a little better at that as I get older and, like, less competitive, but, like...
I think you like the kind of decisions that it's presenting to you and your ability to plan multiple turns ahead. Planning multiple turns ahead isn't very exciting for me.
Oh, yeah.
Because
we almost need to do this for this game.
Well, I'm not really doing it. It's turning out fine, but I think there's a bit of an inevitable... If you can plan ahead and you're making the best decision... It also means your future turns are a little bit inevitable. Like, you're kind of just, like, set on a course. And that is less exciting for me.
Well, and you won by a point.
Yeah.
And, like, you'll just, like, make your decisions on the turns, and I'm usually planning ahead. I will say, in the last round, you did something I didn't expect, which ended up with, like, it was a great thing to do. It ended up in, like, a 25-point swing. Like, I would have won by 20.
Oh, yes.
If you hadn't taken that expensive raid action, which I was definitely going to take and then score 30 points on.
And I thought you would have scored 30 points. And I thought that you also scored the same way you score for trading at the end of the game. I thought you scored for raiding at the end of the game, which is not true.
You do not get to square your raids.
You don't get to square your raids. So I thought you were going to win by 50 and was not having a great time.
No, and then you ended up.
And then I ended up winning because I got to the end and I didn't have anything else to do. So I did that thing because I could get points for having a stronger
military. And you got to upgrade your people.
And I ended up upgrading my military. Now, our thoughts on the game, I think, are pretty clear. We always start with the first question of, is it good? I do think it's good.
Oh, I think
it's a perfectly fine Euro game.
The rondelle, in saying that it's good, I'm going to say one more thing about the mechanics that we didn't say. you start on these variable start tiles, and the start tiles are basically, they're really called stop tiles because they end the round. Like everyone, like you don't just go on forever on this rondelle. Everyone stops and then a new round begins.
Yeah.
And
kind of like the inn in Takedo.
There's six actions on those things, and then there's four dice in a two-player game. So like four of the six spots are going to get taken. The spots at the front are like really good in terms of like getting provisions and
generally
beer.
Generally speaking,
But then you go last to start the round. And I think, and then what those options are on those end tiles changes every round and is variable in every game because they get put on the board in a different order. And I think those kind of change the strategy and dynamic, and I think it's really fun. And you don't get to see what the ending actions for the round are going to be until all the dice get removed. Everyone starts, dice on the stop tile.
Yeah.
Only until the fourth dice is removed. So the everyone's taken two full turns in a two-player game. Do you get to see what the ending actions are? And they definitely have an impact on what you should be doing in that round.
Well.
So like, it's kind of cool to like...
I guess.
Well, I mean, there's like a...
They personally had zero impact on me.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Because, like, if there's a trade tile on the end, like, you can save trade on the end. Like, because I'm basically thinking to myself, like, how many times do I need to do which actions this round? And am I going to have to fight for those things by paying high pips to get ahead of you? Or are you going to give me the cheap ones? Or, like, whatever. And if there's cheap ones on the end, I might stay back so I can jump to the stop tile before you and take the good action. It's a great game.
You sound very engaged on all the things where I was like, oh, so bored. I think that for the theme and what I feel like I ought to be doing, there are other games like Raiders of the North Sea feels way more raiding-ish.
Yeah.
I think there are other games that like for each different part of it, I think there's probably a game that I like more how it's done.
Yeah.
All of this being in one, it does all come together. I do think it is balanced. I am mildly curious about trying the other parts of the action, the other options on the action rondelle, because maybe I will like that more in how it affects the gameplay. Maybe.
Yeah. But I think seems to be less resource scarce, the other sides.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed the resource scarcity.
I did not care for that. And honestly, at the beginning of this one, I had so many resources, which is part
of
why
you had the wrong kinds
up,
of resources, though.
Well, I ended up going for trade because I then used them.
Yeah.
And it was fine. What makes this game unique? We've talked a lot about that action rondelle with the ratcheting. I think the provisions,
doesn't make it unique is it's a Euro game and there's a map.
Yeah. And the map that doesn't, it's not doing a ton, I don't think. So the way the player boards themselves, not necessarily unique, and the kind of the pieces and all that. But having dice with actions on them on the rondelle, that's pretty unique. The provisions do stack on your ship, which as far as the components are concerned, that's sort of unique. It also enforces a max. I think only six fit on there, and you're only ever meant to have six. I actually don't know. There might maybe more fit on there. I'm not sure.
You could get six provisions.
Yeah. And then the fact that rondelle also has changeable parts, so it's not like just a standard.
Yeah.
Always the same kind of thing. As far as how easy it is to learn, as far as Euro games go, of these like strategic complex, it's close enough to the standard of those that like it's pretty easy to learn.
Yeah.
If you've played one, there's enough similar about this one to all the other Euros. And the rule book was well done.
I will say about the rule book.
Okay.
There's good iconography in the game. There's a large quantity of iconography explanation in the game.
Yeah.
And then, like, maddeningly, there's, like, four or five cards that need an explanation that just are omitted from the end of the book where everything else is really well explained.
Yeah, they tell you what each of the icons mean, so you should be able to figure out for all of them anyway. They also specifically list
like
a number of them, like, most of them, but then not all
there were,
of them.
Two of the cards, I was like, well, I would like an explanation for this to make sure I've read it correctly. And it's like, well, we think you should understand that one, basically.
Yeah, so once you've come that far, it's like, well, why not just put every single card in there?
Yeah.
I agree with that. It takes a long time to set it up, to read through all the rules, to play the game, to be checking against the icons as you're playing the first couple times to make sure you are interpreting them correctly. Takes a long time. Our first game, we had to rush and it was still like 4 hours.
Yeah, one, you get an asymmetric start. So Kelly mentioned that you can upgrade your sails, you can upgrade your ship. And each player only has two options for each of the upgrade slots on their board. And those are randomly selected at the beginning of the game. And they definitely should drive your strategy. But the first couple times you're playing, you don't understand how they should drive your strategy and if there's synergy between those tiles.
Yeah. And if there's not synergy between those tiles, I mean, then you're not using your resources on that. You're using them for something else. But then you also don't have these enhanced abilities. I don't know.
It's a beautiful game.
I don't remember disliking it as much the first time as I did the second time.
Right.
The second time, it felt far less magical and a bit more
punishing.
Boring. And I might have also just not really been... It was a weeknight. We started later than I wanted to. I don't know that I was in the headspace for fun. So that could be on me. How do you feel while playing? I don't think that you... You do feel like there are other options you can take, but maybe not good ones.
When I play games like this, I feel like a sense of calm that comes from being strategically invigorated.
Wow. I didn't feel that. I didn't... For there to be this rondel where only one person gets to be on this action and the other person's going to have to pass you or not, I like when you can plan whether you're going to have two turns in a row or not. Yeah. That there's some interesting things about when you're refilling your dice, you get to pick how many beer you're refilling on each one. And that then, can be like a strategic thing. But all of it is like a bit much for me to truly understand every option I have. So then I also don't feel compelled to think about it too long, because I don't even think that I actually have the full complement that I would need to be appropriately deliberative about.
Right.
You can choose to block some things that may be like obvious. You can choose to race ahead to things that you definitely need. Those things are still true. I felt like there were so many options to me and I wasn't going to get to take them all anyway. So why do I even have all these options?
I think the most challenging thing about designing a game, and I thought a little bit about designing a game recently and struggled for whatever, like just in my head, I'm going to talk about it a lot. Like, I think when you're designing a game, you're thinking, okay, well, here's a thousand fun things that should be in this game. And then, like, how possible should it be for everyone to do all the actions? Because if it's supremely possible for everyone to do all the actions, it ends up not being that fun.
I like doing things.
Yeah, but if you can easily do them all, then the game is not challenging.
Doing the thing doesn't have to be where the challenge comes in.
Right.
Necessarily. I don't think. And that's where I'm just saying that if there were three less icons on that rondel, I don't know. That seems fine.
So
that's where I think what I'm saying is, like, I don't know that we actually needed all of the icons on there for how many we end up picking. And I think that would be okay. But we'll see if the other sides maybe affect that. Yeah, in two players or three, as you said, there's two dice. So there's a lot to consider about how you're spending the beer back off and how you're going to be able to refill them. Yeah. And when you are going to have everything you need to do something except for beer.
Right.
Or when you're going to have all the beer that you would need, but you're one resource short. I think a little bit of that is inherent Euro game kind of feel. That's like a common challenge that you might have. But yeah, I didn't like it more in this one.
One of the things that you said you didn't like is trying to determine which die to put your beer on.
Yeah, yeah.
And interestingly, in the four-player game, that part of the mechanic doesn't exist. You just always put on the same die.
Yeah. And once you max out, you don't get to go over that either, which might be more of a struggle in the four-player game, depending on how the flow of everything ends up working. Yeah. I think overall, then we'll get to the closing part now. Would you recommend this game? And for me, I think as like a Euro game specifically, yes, sure. But I think any part of it, there's another game that I like better.
I think, honestly, if somebody wants to play a two-hour game, I would have no hesitation saying, yeah, try this one.
Mm.
It's fun in a lot of ways. And as much interaction as there is, there's not a ton of take that.
There's not that much interaction. You think there's a ton?
Well, there's interaction on the rondel. Like,
you can kind of block people, but because there's so many slots in that rondel, they can still go do it.
Yeah. That's what I mean. There is interaction. Like, you need to be prepared for what your opponent's doing, but your opponents have a hard time like crushing your plan.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't mind that. I also don't like for it feeling like my own, like the thing that I need to do, someone else comes and does it, and now I have nothing to do. Like, that isn't a great feeling in games for me. Some people find that part of the challenge. I don't like that. So that's fair that that's not here. I think I wouldn't have expected myself to say that the action rondel map in Maracaibo I like more than this separate map and action rondel.
You don't even like Maracaibo.
I know. I think Maracaibo is a good game.
I think Maracaibo
doing a thing.
Wins the award for the game you like the least that you've played the most. Because we've probably played 30 sessions of Maracaibo.
I don't think it's 30, but we played through like the campaign that they give to you. And it effectively becomes, that map is effectively an action rondel that has variability because different tiles come out as you play through.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really
scenarios.
Good analogy, to be honest.
And then I feel like the map has more purpose because there are still actions and things to do on the map.
So are you saying what Carvey needs is more cards?
I think it's
a joke because I know you don't like
I know. Card games. I could kind of go for there being less cards. I think I'd like a simplified game of Carvey more than I like the existing one.
I think that you should have the people who make the Three Sisters and the MotoGP to make a...
To make a...
Well, they have a...
Right?
Well, don't they have that game that has like an action rondel?
Three Sisters
has... Do you just want to play Three Sisters?
No.
Oh, I just...
No. The ratcheting thing I like better in Takedo, that you feel like you can do all the things, but the reason to jump ahead. The reason to jump ahead on this one is like, oh yeah, you can't do anything.
I don't like that. I like that a lot. I like that because I like to jump ahead, and I don't like it that when people get to take 7 consecutive turns because I needed a thing.
Oh, it's so exciting to take 7 consecutive turns because someone else needs a thing.
All right.
Oh, it's so good. So yeah, I think that. I think the map and rondel combination I like better in Maracaibo. The cards and then getting the bonuses from the cards. It didn't help that the bonuses available to me from the cards were things I didn't want.
Right, but that's just luck.
That is just luck, and that's what I usually don't like about a big stack of cards. It's like, oh, great, look how all the things I don't want are on the top of this deck.
Yeah.
We're split on the recommendation. I don't think it's a bad Euro.
No,
like
it's a good
all that said, I think it is a well-balanced game. I think it is well-executed. I think it's well done. It just so happens that it's not the one for me. And you said you would recommend it to anyone who's willing for this length and complexity of game.
If you're like, hey, I'm down for a 2 hour.
If you're interested in that fundamentally.
Yeah, if I'm down for a 2 hour kind of light.
I don't think that it's going to sway someone into suddenly liking 2 hour plus Euros.
I don't know. If I had never played Euros before and someone introduced me to this game, I think I would have liked it. But I'm already selected for someone who does like them. So it's hard to say.
I think, you know, even given that, any one person might like it. Yeah.
What
but I think like what is this the best game to say, you know what? Let me introduce to you this kind of next level as far as time and energy is concerned of gaming. I don't think this is the game I'm picking.
I feel like Euros have this challenge for me because I like to play them, but then some of them feel like really sludgy. And this did not feel sludgy to me.
Ooh,
and it
a
definitely
sludge fest.
Felt sludgy to you. Like the Uwe Rosenberg games always feel sludgy to me.
And those, for me, you know what? It's almost exactly opposite.
Right.
I feel like the beginning of those games, because the rule books never vibe with me, I do not like the rule books for any of those games. And when you're starting to do it, it's like so much to be trying to pack into your head. But then for like Fields of Arl, like that's how I feel when I'm starting it. But then as I get near the end of it, I do feel like, how am I going to manage this farm? And I understand the choices that I have.
Right.
And it's compelling to be making a decision between the choices I have as the game gets on. So I feel like I get further and further into it, and I get more and more compelled by the decisions that I have to make. And this one, I felt like I got less compelled about my decisions as time went on.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like an opposite kind of winding down versus gearing up for me.
Oh.
We've really
done it.
We've really had very different experiences.
I guess you're just going to have to buy it. Play
from
it
this game. It's going to be kind of hard to find. I don't know. Now we're seeing, speaking of Maracaibo, we're seeing bigger games come on to Board Game Arena, I think in general, than there maybe used to be.
Yeah.
So Maracaibo is on there now, something I did not expect would happen. So maybe this game will show up on something like Board Game Arena that gives you the chance to see how, who are you closer to as far as an opinion is concerned about this game.
Yeah, round the rondel we go.
We'll just stop.
Cut that.
Yeah, we'll just stop. Thank you so much for listening to episode 145. Be sure to subscribe to know when new episodes drop. You can follow us on Instagram, X, and Twitch at Variant Hex. We have a website and a blog at varianthex.com, and you can email us at podcast@varianthex.com. We're going to squeeze one more episode in before the April month in review, so you're in the middle of two Coffee Shop Games episodes. The next one will be Project L and Junk Orbit, unless you're listening to these in reverse, in which case you have 144 more episodes headed your way, the next one being a Coffee Shop Games about Roland One and Bosa. And that's all for now. Thank you so much for spending your time with us today.